Mr. Verreel 15, you were wounded initially at the time that you were wounded. Did they put a dressing on straight away?
No, they just put the ordinary field dressing on, put my field dressing on. But of course, that only covers you. You've only one field, I've got one, two, three holes. But it wasn't bleeding very much. The wall left just a blue hole in the leg, and it didn't bleed so much. And I'm only managed to still got me to the regimental aid post. And of course, they addressed it.
How far was the regimental aid post from the position?
Well, the position where I got wounded, we weren't so far from where we set off. But I kind of got back. As I say, it wasn't bleeding that much, and the regimental aid post was quite near. I can't just recall how near, but it was quite near, and they still had me a dressing on, gave me an injection, just to kill the pain, I suppose. And then it was back in the farmyard, and then a jeep came with, had stretches of it, took stretches, and they took me in that to the forward dressing station. What was it called? MDS, that's the medical dressing station. CCS, casualty clearing station. There's another one, advanced ADS, I think it was, advanced dressing station. They took me there. And they sort of went over the dressings, give you a cigarette, pot sweet tea. Cigarette was the main thing. And then you went from there back to the medical dressing station, they called it. And then from there to the casualty clearing station. And that's where they did any operations and this sort of thing. And that's where they took the bullet out.
Were you in much pain?
No, I wasn't. I actually, one of the trips, it was in an ambulance, it was an American that drove it, and it was just a dull aching pain. I mean, the time I was hit, it was no pain at all. It was just more of somebody giving you a thump. It wasn't painful at all. Gradually, as I was travelling back, it started to pain me a bit more. But it was never desperately painful. It wasn't too bad. But probably because they kept you doped up, so with the morphine, whatever it was, they gave us.
You got to the casualty clearing station, that was where did they operate on you there?
That's right, they operated on you there. There was lines of little stretches, and actually when I came out, there was two or three others there from my company that had gone the night that I got wounded. I got wounded on the 22nd of November, and that night they actually put an attack in out to try and get across the river. And one of the first ones that came out, there was a stretcher next to mine. It was one of the lads from my company that had been on the attack the night following the day I got wounded. And he'd been hit in the arm. Well, they took the bullet out from mine, stitched you up, and gave you the bullet in a little envelope as a souvenir, just a small 9mm bullet. And then from there, then took us to hospital at they've got Farno on the coast, and it was there a few days, and then we went on by hospital ship, then back on hospital ship down to I think it was Barry, down on the.
How did they treat you at the first hospital? Was it a strongly militarily disciplined
hospital? No, there were just nursing yeomanry nurses. Yeah, it was Sandwich Andrews nurses. They were quite friendly. In fact, the woman from Huddersfield looked at it in me. I'm quite near here. No, there were, it wasn't, at that time it wasn't strict. Later on, the hospital was a bit, anybody that was active at all, they had to be washing the windows and doing the sweeping, and that sort of thing, if you get off about. But, I mean, they didn't bollock on me, put it that way. But that first one, it was only for a few days, it was almost like a transit, I suppose.
Were they changing your dressings regularly?
No, they didn't do there, no. They stitched it all up and dressed it, but they didn't do anything else, I don't think, at that particular hospital. It wasn't until we got down to the British General Hospital down at, I think it was a place called Barletta, near Barrett, somewhere near that part of Barrett. Went down there and it was actually in a marquee, like an annex. There they did a further the left leg, it was either some infection and whether part of the cloth or something had been carried into the wound, but it sort of went the wrong way and actually the pulse of it, but we pulsed it on, that sort of thing. And there they took the stitches out. There was next bed there was a chap with his leg off, with a Yugoslav partisan in Zagreb he was from. And he'd been brought across from Yugoslavia, being a bit there. As I say, the hospital itself, it was fairly regimental, with like the matron, sort of, I don't know what rank she was, but she was a bit of a dragon, like in those days, just about that in the hospital zone anyway, so it wasn't really anything out of the ordinary, but there's no mollycoddling, yeah. If you could get out of bed, you'd get out and knock somebody else, and, all that sort of thing.
What was the daily routine in the hospital? What time, for example, were you woken?
We woke early on about 6 o'clock, and came over to drink in a bowl. Nearly always bowls you got around, because you'd get cups, like a tin bowl. And then after that, you'd get washed, help anybody else check the next bed to me. Once I could get up, once I could start walking about a bit. I mean, I couldn't go first, obviously. And when we knew we were still only with one leg, and even that was when he got gangrene in the chest, taking bits off. And I used to sort of help him a bit. You helped each other, and it was all right. They were all lads together. You were a bit of fun, and calling out for the orderlies were nearly all Italian. You know, hard ways. Just got a bit of fun with all. Generally speaking, you were happy enough because you were out of the fighting, so I mean, anything would have been better than that. So it wouldn't matter how rough it was, really, in hospital. You were happy enough.
Were there daily doctor's rounds, as you
know? Yeah, the doctors came round, just to say. And I always got into trouble for looking at the. But, the thing at the bottom of the bed, but temperature chart. The matron caught me looking at that and be like, rollicking. Forbidden. I don't know why. But that was, must be part of the discipline. And eventually we were allowed out. And in the old hospital, looking out from the Boer War, with the blues. blue suit and white shirt and a bit of a red tie.
Did you get any visitors into the hospital itself, of people coming in to see you?
There was this chap, funnily enough, there was this lad that was on this stretcher next to me in the kind of plane station. He finished up in the same hospital, as me in a different ward. And he was hit in the heart, in the arm, so he used to come and see me. And there was an officer called Buchanan, and he'd been hit with a Tommy gun bullet, actually, in the hip. And he was in, I went to visit him, he was in another ward. But this lad, being hit in the arm, Rutledge, we call him, he from Sheffield. And I used to write his letters for him, because he couldn't write, so I used to write his letters for him. And, another chap visited me that must have found out I was in, that was in a convalescent near land. He came in to see me. He'd been wounded, but he was on more than convalescent. So he did get visited as far as that. But I mean, you wouldn't normally, because nobody knew you. You'd have been nobody that knew you. Yeah. But it didn't matter in the army, because you were all together. You were all strangers, but at the same time, you were all comrades, you could say, couldn't you? Yeah, you sort of talk to them, you know, the more you like. Any other, as long as you were a soldier, you were a soldier, you were pals, yeah.
Were your parents informed that you'd been wounded?
Yeah, they were. When I got to the casualty clearance station, I asked the padre, I said, can you write a letter to my mother? You know, quick and soon. And then she won't get so much of a shock when she gets your official telegram. So he said he would, but I don't really know now whether they received it. But they received a telegram to say that I'd been wounded. And, but they don't say I'll see any something like that. So your parents could wonder. I mean, in my case, it wasn't really serious, but they would be thinking it was. I'm not thinking it was, but wondering if it was. But so I was hoping that if they could write a letter first, and to tell them that I was okay. But I can't remember whether they got it or not. But they certainly got a telegram.
Were you well fed?
In hospital? Oh, yes, yes. Yes, we were. No problems really there at all. Yeah, we were well fed, we got cigarettes. Yeah, with chicken and all the rest of it, yeah, we did well there. Yeah. Mind they wanted to build up to go back in.
And you say when you got on your feet you were allowed out?
Yeah. Just allowed. I was saying the issue with hospital blues. And they were really, I don't know what year they were, but it must at least have been the First World War. So I think we rested. And the little old red like a tie. And the shirt, I don't know how many wore it before you liked it.
Were you invited to places in the neighbourhood?
No. No, there's nothing like that. But
how long was it before you got on your feet?
Actually, walking about. It wasn't too long, because I started doing exercising, physiotherapy and that sort of thing, getting walking about and doing this with weights on the legs and that sort of thing, straightening your legs. I can't just remember the length of time. It wasn't that long, and then I had a total of 84 day treatment. That included convalescent camp as well. But I don't know just what the length of time in each. I should think that I was probably in hospital longer than what I'm thinking, really, because you wouldn't, can't see them keeping you in convalescent that long.
Where did you go to for convalescent?
I can't think. I can't think. It was somewhere near Barry. Wait a minute. What did you call it? A place called San Martino, which was near Benevento. But I think that was just a transit camp on our way back. I think it was more or less somewhere near Barry on the east coast, where we were convalescent. And I tried to get back to you to my unit. They used to say that the only way you can get back to your unit is if they ask for you specifically. If you if your commanding officer asks for you. So I wrote off to Major Stringer and asked him if he could request that I was returned to unit. Otherwise you finish up in transit camps and you finish up in Cold Stream anywhere else. I don't think he ever got the letter because I think he got wounded in Greece, so they were in Greece by then, you see. Anyway, when I was getting towards the end of my convalescence, I got a pass. I asked one of the doctors if I could have a day's pass to go down to Toronto, because there was a convalescent, not a convalescent, what they call a DIU, a Divisional Reinforcement Unit at Toronto, and it's where they collected all members of the division. And then they shipped them to the other division. So I thought, if I can get to there, I'm sort of halfway there. So I got this pass, I'd have to hitchhike with anybody, carrying wagons and trucks and all sorts down to Toronto. Then I had to fire this division reinforcement unit. By that time it was getting dark. Eventually I managed to find it and found an officer that wrote me a letter. Officer of Manchester Regiment, I think it was it. And he wrote me a letter saying that if I was returned to the DIU, that they'd see that I'd got back to my unit. I thought, well, that's all right. So I had this letter, and the following week I was graded, passed for PIP. They sent me to this Atlantic camp, I don't know where that was. And I got to this transit camp, so I want to go to the DIU. I've got this letter, you know. Oh no, you can't do that. You've had over that more than, I think it was 80 day treatment, something like that. If you'd had more than 80 days, you'd have to go to a transit camp. So that was it, I had to go to a transit camp. And so this transit camp, this was near Benevento, that's right. The transit camp, I went from Barry then across to this transit camp at Benevento, San Martino, near Benevento. And then from there, went by train then across to Naples, to a camp near Naples. Well, not actually in Naples, a camp, another transit camp near Naples. And you could have stopped there more or less forever, because nobody knew you were there. You used to have parades, and they used to read it from Naffy Roll or something, you know your name, and you could go down at the Naples and hitch a ride into Naples. Anyway, eventually I was sent to another transit camp, and there was me and another sergeant there, Sergeant Snowden. He was actually the Bravo side for my battalion. And they wanted one sergeant back at the battalion, you see, just me and him. So we sort of spun up for it, and I won the toss. So I was sent shipped down to Toronto, to what they call the ex-transit camp at Toronto, and wait for the boat and go across to Greece. Never come, they came back. They were most likely on the point of coming back. So I was finished up preparing the camp for them to come back to. And they came back from Greece to Toronto. And then I was detailed then to go on a dance party back up north by road.
What date would this be?
The April,
1945.
Yeah. I was in this camp, this transit camp. I'd got done out of, there was a lot of forgery money about, and I had to collect all the money for the get the Naffy rations, which is a joint in bulk, tried to collect all the money, get the list of what they wanted, and go, well, go to draw the rations in. Got the wire, cigarettes, and everything. They're all just hooked. I didn't know, they were all strangers. And paid. And there were two of these lads that gave me a 10,000 lira note. And anyway, they come back to this is a one of them was a dud. So who's what? I didn't know which one it was, and each of them denied it was their right. So I had to finish up standing it, had to keep the 10,000 lira note and pay them off. So when they came back, from Greece to this camp that we'd been getting money, I said, oh, we'll go down into Taranto to the sergeant's club, sergeant's in the war school in Taranto. I said, I'll pay, you know, I've got to see. So we got all the drinks and everything else, and I gave him this note, and waited for him. No, it's a party. I couldn't get rid of it, so kept it. So they'd have to go on this advance party by truck, so we finished up, way around Rimini, somewhere like that, on the coast, staged at night. So I went in there. Very dark place somewhere to order some wine and pass it off there. Anyway, then we carried on and we finished up, I think it was Pauline Popoli, the concentration area. And the rest of the battalion, a lot of them came up by boat, by foot. We were in this concentration area and then that's where the war finished. Where the war in Italy finished then.
Was the battalion in good heart when you saw it back from Greece?
Oh yes, they're okay. They'd been having a good time after the fight had finished. They were having dances and, you know, I was only mad that I couldn't get across there to them, you know. And,
so the end of the war came whilst you were there. Do you recall your celebrations for the war ending?
Oh, we were in a field and we were in bivouacs, two men bivouacs. And oh, the real night of it, with bonfire, big bonfire going. A couple of the officers dressed up as girls, the young women, and drove around in the jeep. There was a competition for the best dressed jeep. One was done up like a gondola, and we had an effigy of it that had burnt that, and we all got drunk with plenty of wine and. It was a real night, especially when we knew the war was with our life, as it was. And we had really a really good night, yeah.
At that point in time, are there thoughts and memories of friends you'd lost whilst you're celebrating?
I don't think you did, really. I don't think you did, yeah. It's a funny thing. I mean, you see these films about it, you see these films, especially wicked films, where the chap gets, the mate gets killed, and they have the crime. But in my experience, that didn't happen. I don't know why. I think it was just a thing you accepted, and it could have been you, and it wasn't. And perhaps you were glad it wasn't you, or you obviously were glad it wasn't you, but. You've thought since, I've thought many times since, but at the time, no, I didn't, no, I don't think many did,
So your celebrations obviously went on for quite some time.
Well, not too long, because we moved almost, we started moving further north then. We moved up to a few places, around Udine, I think it was, or Viva or something, and all this sort of thing, you know, around Udine. And then we went through into Austria then.
Were you meeting any partisans at this time?
We met a few Italian partisans as such, yeah.
What impression did they make on you?
Well, they were, I don't know, really. You didn't really know what they'd be doing, whether they'd just put their armband on and said they were partisans, you know, I don't know, really. We did see them, but we were all plenty of bluster about them and sort of what they're doing and all this sort of thing. But
when you moved into Austria, the German army must have been in a state, and were they straggling back, or was there any organisation?
No, there was. when we moved through to Austria, we went to, funnily enough, I went a few years back and went exactly through the same place. And just trying to think what the border town where we went through, Domodos, I think, maybe. And when you got through, the road was just strewn with steel helmets and rifles, and just been strewn, you know. And they didn't see a lot of like troops or anything else. Their dad had gone, so you know, got back away quick by the time we got through there. Or they'd been taken prisoner or whatever, you know. But
had you been issued with orders on what you had to do and how you had to behave in Austria?
Well, you've just been told you had to speak to everybody. You had to fraternise with any German or any Austrians at all. Well, that's what you had to do. Unless it was in line of telling them to do something or like that, but you had to be friendly. You had to sort of be friendly or anything at first. Anyway.
How did the Austrians receive you?
Well, they're all right. I found that they seemed to, especially from later, when we used to have to go out into the countryside to round them up. We used to round soldiers up and come to home and that, and bring them back in. And they were so helpful. I mean, it never would have happened here. If you went out to up into the hills and you're looking for somebody, you've got the name, and you stop somebody here, and you said, I've come to arrest this man, can you tell me where he is? They'd say, no, I don't know. But there, oh yes, it's just up there, and you know, whether it was because you were in authority, I don't know. But they're quite willing to show you where the chap is. In fact, when we arrested one chap, we did call it arrested, we just need to pick him up anyway, it's on our list. And we arrested him in this house and told him, bring your towel and soap and razor. And this is part of what we did when we went to Austria. I might be jumping ahead of it. And I says, right, come with me. Right, so we took him out of this house and walked him about. I said to this lad, we just went. You know where he lives? And he started laughing, you know. He took us back to house with his mate when he's out with him. So, and he'd been his mate were laughing at him because we rested him, and we followed him as well. We used to go around 50, 60 miles picking people up like that.
Were these Austrians or Germans that you're picking up,
either?
That had been in the German army?
Yeah. They were, I don't know what they wanted before. We used to, as I said, this one initially when we first went into Austria, this was a little later on when we started with these patrols. We used to be given lists, and we had a German with us, ex German soldier, who was acting as interpreter. And probably 15 on the vehicle, and two or three men, and we just set up. We just got a map, so we got a map where we had to go. And we had to find the village, and then we used to go to the village burgomaster and ask him to tell him where these men lived. And to tell you, you know, to just, you know, didn't even take you, show you where they lived. So, which we thought was strange. Whereas I think here, we probably think, no, I've never heard of him.
Did the Austrians have any love for the Germans?
I think they did, really. In my mind, I think they just thought of themselves as... I don't think there's been any much resistance against the Germans occupying. Oh, no, they believe they thought they were part of the German nation, really, in a way. That's my opinion. Yeah.
Did you find the fraternisation or non-fraternisation regulation a bit difficult? I mean, you know, the British soldier with children.
It was difficult at first because naturally we're not really like that. We like to, even though the war was finished, you were quite prepared to let bygones be bygones and chat to people. But you weren't allowed to. But it didn't last that long, as far as I remember.